A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday to you, Betsy.
Why, thank you.
Maybe we should make a happy Saturday song.
Oh, I'll let you be in charge of that.
We could sing.
I'll let you be in charge of that, too.
I'm going to work on that.
Okay.
Maybe next week we'll start with a Happy Saturday song.
Okay.
We'll get the Repco Light singers here.
Oh, good heavens.
What are we talking about today? Let's just quit talking about singing.
Yeah. Today we are actually, I'm very excited for this. We're having our first hands-on listen and learn segment. That means you need to go grab your tape measure because you're going to need
right.
it for the
so
fourth segment.
Go get it. We're not joking.
No,
you're going to want
absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
We'll also be talking about buried treasure that a lot of us have in our homes right now and we just don't know it.
Right. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to answer another Facebook question. Some lucky listener is about to be 50. Bucks richer.
Exactly. That's going to be fun. But first, we're in the studio with Nick Sargent from Johnson Carpet One in Granville.
Mm-hmm.
Nick's been on the show multiple times.
Yep.
He's always got a ton of information. And today, we're going to talk about area rugs. That was something important to you, Betsy.
Yes. I'm very excited about this. So, Nick, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, so today we want to talk about area rugs because I know, at least for myself, mm-hmm. there's a lot of confusion when it comes to area rugs. I have no idea how to use them, where to use them. I mean, yeah. when I think area rug, it's something small and I'm going to set my boots on it. But
yes.
I have a hunch you're going to tell me that is not right. So what do I do with an area rug? Where do I use it?
Area rugs are usually... they help to find spaces.
Okay.
So when you have a large room in a living room area and such that, or you have other areas in there, it helps make a room with inside of a room.
Okay.
So other areas, we use them because they might be easier to clean
mm-hmm.
Than, say, a hardwood floor or tile in like a dining room area. Other areas, you know, it's just sometimes we want our feet to sink into something versus hard floor. So when you put it in a bedroom, you have tile or hardwood. You know, waking up in the morning, your feet on
right.
a rug, not like boom on, you know, tile.
Yeah, that's why I have cushy slippers.
Yeah.
So when I think of area rugs, mm-hmm. so often in my mind, I think of this rug that doesn't quite go wall to wall. It's like 6 inches out from each wall. Explain
yes.
to me the appropriate way to use an area rug, like size wise, it shouldn't take up the whole room.
No, it should not take up the whole room.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'd just get carpet.
Yeah.
Well, that's
easier.
What I always thought. But
yeah.
it pictures.
If you spent the money to have like a tile or hardwood, you still at least want some of it to show.
Right.
You don't want to cover it all up. You know, it should go under the furniture at least, you know, if you're doing a living room area, it should go under the coffee table and then at least under the first front legs of the furniture.
Okay.
Some people like it bigger. Sometimes we have, say, a sofa table behind or something, and, you know, we want it to be even level. So there again, doing it outside to the back of the furniture is perfectly acceptable.
So I want to get the furniture on the rug, but the sizes of the rugs that I see in the store don't work for the room that I've got.
You know, you go to the store and you see like 5x7, 8x10s, or 9x12s. You see these very unique sizes. Sometimes they're like a random foot and a couple inches. A lot of times they're made overseas. You know, they're made in China, India, Turkey, or Europe. And while they don't sometimes have houses as big as we do these mm-hmm. days, so,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're forced to use these sizes that we've used for hundreds of years, and they don't fit American households these
okay.
days that much anymore. So, what we do a lot at Johnson Carpet is we can take any broadloom carpet and turn it into a custom area rug. And then you
I can get the size I need
yes.
that way.
Okay, so you can make any size you want.
So what about the edging and stuff?
We can finish it like an area rug. You know, you have tape binding or you serge it or,
can
you know.
You tassels?
like
a magic
that is
rug?
Out there, but nobody really does that anymore. I hate to tell you.
Well, of course no. I would not do that. I'm just saying.
Of course not. However,
children throw away yeah. all the rugs that we've got with tassels, which is most of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So the tassel option is available.
Yes, it
for
is
those
still.
Of us with exquisite taste.
For
yes.
people like Dan.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have another question.
Yes.
Now this is kind of for my parents as well. They have a giant, and I mean a huge living room. And my
yes.
mom wants to tear out the carpet that's in there now,
yeah.
put in hardwood floors. But when they bought that house, that room echoed so bad. I cannot picture hardwood floors in there. So she said something about an area rug, but this room is so massive. Is an area rug even going to deaden sound enough? I mean, is that what they're meant to do a little bit in big spaces?
Yes. So that's another benefit of having an area rug in an area is in our great rooms, and sometimes we have cathedral ceilings, you know, we have these rooms that are 20 by some humongous length there.
That's what theirs is.
Yes. And they go into an open kitchen area, sometimes an open dining room area, and it gets echoey and loud in there.
Yeah.
Rugs, any type of fabric rugs, you know, they help deaden sound.
Okay.
So they will absorb sound.
So if they have a 20 by 30 living room, which I think is the measurements of their living room, how big does this rug have to be?
I mean, you could do a 12 by 15 size.
Okay, and that would do it.
Yes. You know, that would define the space. If you have like a sitting room area off to the side, we'd probably do a little bit smaller, maybe like a 10 by 12 or something at that point. You know, and then we'd probably do another rug under the little sitting area in the corner, or if you have a dinette or dining room area, something different under there to define.
So multiple rugs.
Multiple rugs,
defining multiple areas.
Yes.
That's a cool idea. Yeah.
Could they get like leftover carpet samples that you don't want anymore? And would you stitch those together for them at
patchwork look.
Well, I'm just trying to save the money because I care.
Oh, right.
That's probably
you can do that.
Not making me look stupid.
I've heard it been done before. We even have people who will look at, you know, in the commercial section, we have commercial carpet tiles and they're typically 2 foot by 2 foot. And those you can actually, you know, put together and make an area rug area and create interesting patterns and stuff like that.
That was not as dumb a question as I thought. Yeah. I shouldn't have tipped my hand that I thought it was dumb. People would have thought I was being smart.
Right.
Well, we're on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show talking with Nick Sargent from Johnson Carpet One in Granville, talking about area rugs. And one of the big questions that I've got, I've always had with this, I love the look of the rugs.
Yes.
But I don't have hardwood flooring.
Okay.
And I have seen from time to time people layering them on carpet.
Yes. Yes.
Help me understand. Is that okay? Am I damaging my carpet?
No, you're not damaging carpet. Typically, people do it when they have like a really, really tight basic plush carpet, like, you know, beige and it's really tight, you know, it's a short pile, or they have a really, really low level loop carpet.
Gotcha.
And, you know, having that in a very large space is kind of boring and you want to define different areas and or maybe pop it. Doing a rug on top of that is perfectly acceptable. A lot of times it's going to be a larger area rug. So it is going to stay there and not move.
Okay.
And cause friction, which will damage the rug under there. And then other times, you know, people will layer on top of that, you know.
Another rug on that?
Multiple rugs.
Yeah.
So if I were standing in the middle of a room with
you'd
layered rugs, I'd be able to reach stuff.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, With clients before, you know, we've taken, you know, we might have a base rug at the bottom or a sisal rug, which is a natural grass type rug, you know, and those are nice and they're amazing looking and they wear forever, but they're not exactly the softest thing around. So, you know, we might put another rug on top of that. You'll see, like, you know, it's very on trend to do a cowhide rug on top of that or a sheepskin type rug of that, you know, or doing a shag on top of that as well, you know, and you leave about anywhere from 6 to a foot around the edges. So you see that, and, you know, we can do that as well.
Now, will you help people kind of put this together?
Yes.
Because to me, that's mind-boggling.
Yes.
How I'm going to put that together and like it. Okay, so you do all of that. Now, we've only got a little bit of time left. Style-wise, what's out there?
What you can imagine they make these days. I mean, we have catalogs on top of catalogs on top of catalogs, you know, and or you go to a rug store and you just see rugs after rugs after rugs. I mean, everything from your traditional orientals to very contemporary bright color stuff. So, yes.
Okay.
I do have one last question. What goes underneath these? Because, you know, a bigger rug, I'm guessing, doesn't slip around. Smaller rug, they have that non-skid, whatever.
You're supposed to sweep all the dirt from the room underneath the rug and, like, your secrets that you don't want people to know about. Right?
Right. Yeah. We'll leave that to you.
So we have thicker rug pads, which you can get, that have that a more rubbery non-skid attached to it, plus some, it's like a synthetic. It used to be made out of horsehair today, but it's basically recycled material made to look like horsehair these days to put under that. So it gives you a little extra cushion.
Mm-hmm.
When we do custom area rugs, we can certainly attach a non-skid backing to it.
Okay.
Especially, you know, like a 5x7 or smaller, you know, that stuff, when it goes on the floor, it keeps it right on spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you do these custom rugs,
yes,
Do you deliver them? How do people get them? I've got to get a big truck.
Yeah. So we offer delivery. We have our either deliver to garage or we have our white glove delivery where we will.
Well, that
come
sounds
in.
Really super fancy.
It is fancy.
That.
It
do
is
you bring,
fancy.
Like a little something for me to snack on while you install.
Fortunately, no, oh. No, no.
Do they clean anything while they're there?
No, sorry.
Yeah.
Do they check to all see the, if I've cleaned anything?
I was going
to
say all the dirt that you swept under the last rug.
Well, Nick, if our listeners want to get in touch with you to just kind of talk more about this or any of the other things you offer at Johnson Carpet One, how do they best do that?
Downtown Granville, we're open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. Corner of Chicago Drive in Wilson.
Excellent. Nick Sargent from Johnson Carpet One. Thanks so much for being here. Coming up next, after the break, we're answering a paint question and doling out a cool $50 in cash.
Everyone's on the edge of their seats.
Let's find out who gets it after the break. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, Betsy, let's do another Ask Repco Light segment.
Woohoo!
Those are fun. I've been enjoying those a lot. We've been doing this for the last few weeks, but just in case it's new for you, we've been answering questions from our Facebook page.
Yes.
And then we give away a $50 gift certificate, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
So all you need to do is just go to Repco Light's Facebook page. There's a post there about asking questions and getting money. Just ask a question right there. If we answer it on the air, we'll give you some money, $50. Pretty cool.
Exactly.
Now, this week, we have a question from Betsy Dimitrik.
Oh, this is going to throw me for a loop.
Yeah, so we've got two Betsys that we're going to be dealing with. Betsy's an unusual name.
It is
an unusual
name.
I don't know very
name.
Many Betsys.
You know, I have met more. The older I've gotten, the more I have met. But usually they're, you know, my age and older. You don't find them younger.
So anyway, Betsy Dimitrik, you won the $50 gift certificate this week. And we'll figure out how to get you that later.
Right.
But right now, let's just get to the question. Mm-hmm. And it's this. Betsy wonders, should I put a polyurethane top coat on my kitchen cabinets? She says, I just bought Benjamin Moore's Advance and the Styx primer, and she plans on doing one coat of primer and two coats of finish paint. But she's unsure if she'll need to seal the cabinets with polyurethane before she reinstalls everything.
Yeah.
Now, this is a common idea.
It
comes up all the time in the store.
Yeah, people ask about it all the time. They think they should put it on kitchen cabinets to make them more durable. It's common on furniture. People think that this is going to give them more durability.
That a polyurethane over top of your finish paint is going to increase the durability and the life of whatever piece you're working on.
Right. They think it's going to give more scrubability when something spills on it. And they also, this is a common thing, especially on the internet, which is, of course, is where we found it. They think it's going to give them a really smooth finish. It's going to smooth out whatever paint they already have down
there. So those are the ideas behind why you would put a polyurethane on.
Right.
Should you do it, though? Well, no. That's the short answer. Don't do it.
No.
So if you've got that brush dipped in polyurethane, Betsy, and you're getting ready to go,
stop.
Just put it down and walk away for a second.
Yes.
We're going to walk through the reasons why you shouldn't. And the first one is simply this. If you get the correct paint, it's going to be sufficiently durable as is.
Right.
And that's for any of these projects. Now, there are certain projects where a polyurethane over top of the paint is the way to go.
Right.
But that's generally decorative kind of work.
Yep.
And we're not talking about any of those.
No.
This is just paint on a kitchen cabinet and putting polyurethane over top. The paint that you choose, if you get the right one, is going to be durable enough. And in Betsy's instance, she mentioned that she's using Benjamin Moore's Advance.
Yeah, and that's absolutely perfect for cabinets. It's washable, it's durable, it's everything you really need on cabinets all on its own. So there's no need to introduce this polyurethane on top of it. The Advance will work just fine. So buying the right paint and in the right sheen is imperative because you want to, especially for something like this, satin sheen or higher on kitchen cabinets.
That's what will give you the washability that you're looking for.
Yep.
So first reason not to is the finish paint is good enough if you get the right one.
Yep.
The second reason you don't want to put polyurethane over your finish paint is because polyurethane's yellow over time and they can cause color problems and make touch-up really, really difficult down the road.
Yes.
Now, there are two main types of polyurethanes. There's an oil-based version and a water-based version, just to really, really simplify things.
Right.
The oil-based version naturally yellows over time. So if you would put that over white or a lighter color, you know, on furniture or cabinets or trim or whatever, it's going to yellow and it's going to be noticeable.
Absolutely.
So you're going to see that yellowing. That's going to be a problem. And that's what makes touch-up so tough, because now you're not just touching up the paint anymore. You're touching up this yellowed version of it. It's not the same color as it used to be.
Right. Now, water-based polyurethanes aren't going to yellow over time like that. But, now this is a big but.
This is a big but? That is awkward.
Let's just roll with it.
Okay. So go ahead. I'll be adult.
Okay. Yeah, right. In this instance, Betsy mentioned that she's going to use Advance. And Advance is what they call a modified oil, which is oil particles that are suspended in water. It gives you the durability and the flow and leveling of an oil, but with the cleanup of soap and water. Now, if you put polyurethane that's water-based over top,
which has ammonia in it,
it's actually going to yellow faster. The paint underneath is going to yellow faster, so you're still going to end up with that funky yellow color coming through.
So in this instance, even a water-based polyurethane could cause problems.
So either way, you're going to get yellowing.
Right. So don't do it. Now, we're going over reasons why not to put a polyurethane top coat over finish paint on cabinets or furniture.
Right.
And we've gone through a couple. Let's just keep going because we've got a couple more quick ones.
Right.
The third reason you don't want to do this is that a polyurethane over finish can actually wreak havoc on a project because of intercoat adhesion problems.
Yeah, that sounds complicated.
Intercoat adhesion. It makes me sound really, really smart.
It does. It sounds very technical, but really it isn't. It just means that your two coats, your base coat of whatever paint and the polyurethane might not stick together. They might actually separate once you get them on there.
And if they do, you can say, oh, look, everybody, we're having intercoat adhesion problems in the kitchen. Come look.
And then you'll feel very down.
Well, you'll feel very proud that you know to say that, but then very sad because it's a very tough problem to fix.
Yes, it is. It's a mess.
So don't go that way.
No.
You don't run into that if you just use paint.
Nope.
Usually, unless you really screw something up. But we'll help you make sure you don't do that.
Right. Now, with all of that said, let's get to this one little internet thing where they said that it's going to smooth out the finish, your top coat finish.
Right, and just make it look nicer. So you've got a bumpy finish, you put polyurethane over top of it, and it's glassy smooth. That's the idea.
Right.
There is some truth to that. You're probably going to get a smoother finish by doing that.
There is, but you will still will probably, especially if you use an oil-based polyurethane, you're still going to end up with the yellowing. You could, if you're using Advance and water-based, you're going to end up with yellowing.
All of the problems we talked about are still going to occur.
You might get all of them
Right, if you're lucky. So all of that's going to still happen, but you might be able to smooth out that finish a little bit. It's not worth it. The benefit of smoothing that out with a polyurethane is far outweighed by the potential ramifications of what could go wrong.
Right.
A better solution to getting a smooth finish is to just, like we said at the very beginning, use the right product.
Right.
And Advance, again, is a perfect product for this because it self-levels so beautifully. You're going to get a great finish on Advance without having to put anything over top of it.
You also want to be sure that you're using the right tools to apply it, because by using the right tools, you will eliminate some of that little textured look that you get when you roll out cabinets.
Cheap tools will produce results like that.
Absolutely.
So get better tools, use the right product. You won't have to worry about smoothing that finish out. One last quick reason not to put polyurethane over your cabinets is it's an extra step.
Yeah.
You got this far.
Who
you
wants
got
to
two,
do that?
Yeah, you got two coats of finish on. Let's get the kitchen back together and
move on with
life. Yeah, who
wants to wait another week or two while polyurethane dries?
Don't do the extra step.
No.
All right, Betsy. I hope that helps the Betsy listener.
I was going to say, not me, right?
Yeah. I hope it helps you, Betsy Dimitrik, and we'll be in touch via Facebook to figure out how to get you your gift certificate. Everybody else, go to Repcolite's Facebook page, ask questions, and who knows, maybe we're talking about you next week. In a good way.
Now it's time for a break. Wait after the Repcolite commercial, then go to your junk drawer and get out your tape measure. You're going to want it for the fourth segment. But coming up right after the break, we're going to tell you about buried treasure that is right beneath your feet, and you might not even know it. That's next. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Buried treasure is really, really cool, Betsy. I mean, I think we can agree on that.
Oh,
that's an unspoken thing.
Yes.
It's just cool.
Right.
Well, I found a map in my old house on the back of a cupboard door.
Mm-hmm.
And I was completely surprised to find this map there. And then very, very excited because I assumed I was on the path to riches.
Mm-hmm.
So I tracked it down in the backyard. I found all the little landmarks that the map referenced and traced it down to this one little spot where the X was.
I am literally on the edge of my seat.
Oh, you know how it turns out, I bet. It wasn't money. it was the water line.
Oh, wow. That's a complete letdown.
Such a letdown. But the fun of buried treasure kept me going for a couple of days there.
Right.
I was very excited.
Well, yeah. What most people don't know is they might actually have buried treasure right under their feet. If you just pull back the carpet a little bit,
you might find hardwood floors just waiting to be restored.
Yep.
And restoring them is actually a great project. It's not super complicated.
No.
It just does take some time.
And some patience.
And some patience. Yeah. And the right information.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're going to give you right now. Now, the first place to start when you're trying to decide if this is a project you want to tackle is what the old floors look like, and do you want to finish them or simply revive them?
So
because there is a difference.
There is a difference. Why don't you quickly... Emphasis on quickly. Tell us the difference.
Now, just reviving an old floor is very simple. It's just sanding it down and putting a new coat of polyurethane over top of that. It just brightens it back up, covers up the scratches and things like that.
Works
that might
well
be there.
If that's all that's wrong with it. If the finish is just scratched or dull, but the color of the floor is good and the condition is good, reviving it might be just fine.
Right.
The other option is to refinish it, which is to take it all the way down to bare wood.
Absolutely. You have to get all of that polyurethane off there. You need to sand through all of that stain so that you have a clean slate.
It's a great way to go, but it is more work than the other process we mentioned. And now, I guess speaking about the work, let's actually lay out what's involved. And let's start with the first process we mentioned, reviving the floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we just talked about, the floor is in good shape. It's just that the finish is a little bit dull or not lively enough. Lively enough?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound right.
Well... Yeah, kind of.
It doesn't look as good as it should.
Right.
So you would recoat it with a coat of polyurethane just to brighten it back up.
Right.
Now, the steps to doing this are pretty straightforward.
Yep.
First, you would clean the floor. Now, don't use Murphy's oil soap.
Yes, my mom was always a big fan of that when I was a kid. And it just, it's like this greasy residue left behind.
Everybody wants to use that.
Don't.
But don't use it.
It's not a cleaner.
Exactly. It's not good for this. We would recommend TSP.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of different options, but TSP works. It's old school, but it works. Use the powder.
Mm-hmm.
There's a liquid version of it. Use the powder.
Yeah.
Works a little better. Get a Scotch-Brite pad, you know, one of those little scrubbies you'd use for dishes, and scrub the floor. Because all kinds of stuff ends up on a floor over the years. You got to get all of that off.
Yep.
So do that, and then give the floors a really good rinse with clean water to remove any of the residue.
Right. Now, before you actually go to putting polyurethane on top of the floor, you need to test in an inconspicuous area to be sure that you're not going to have any adhesion problems or anything else that might happen, because we've seen it happen before where the coating doesn't stick. So try it, little test patch of polyurethane, whatever you're going to use, in a corner, something like that, and then let it sit for a full 24 hours and then do what we call a tape test. You just put a piece of tape on there and pull it off and see if the coating comes off with it.
Now, what's important, implied in what Betsy talked about, is sanding that little area before you put the polyurethane on.
Yes, to make sure it sticks.
Yeah, so you got to do a little sanding, put the poly on, do the tape test, and we're good to go.
Right.
If it works, then it's time to proceed with the steps.
Right.
If you do pull up that tape and see coating on there, or you lift the coating that you put on the floor, then you need to reassess.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, we'd recommend just taking some pictures and coming out to any Repcolite or Port City paint store, and we'll kind of talk through the situation.
Right.
But for the sake of this, let's just say that the test worked, everything looked good.
Mm-hmm.
Now you just need to sand the floor and put your polyurethane on. To sand it, you know, one way to do it would be to put like a drywall screen or a sanding screen on a pole sander.
Mm-hmm.
And basically just...
A very fine grit. You want a 220, maybe even higher. You just barely want to scuff that surface. If you use something more coarse, it can show through the coat that you're about to put on.
Then you'll have other problems.
Yes.
So, yeah, a light sanding over the floor.
Yep.
And then a rinse with clean water to get all the sanding dust off. And then apply your polyurethane.
Yep.
Now, all right, that's reviving the old floor.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times, the floors need more than just a little reviving.
They need a little TLC.
Yeah, they need complete resuscitation.
Yes.
And that would be the refinishing process. And that means sanding it down down to bare wood.
Yeah.
Now, commonly when people do this, they will rent a drum sander. The problem with that is they are very tough to work with. Even if you're a professional, they can pose problems.
Right.
If you're not a professional, you can really do some damage.
I did
an upstairs floor, and I could not control that thing smoothly enough to get a nice finish. I have gouges, valleys, peaks, you know, all of that where I let it sit too long in one spot. It happened very fast. And I was surprised how much damage I did. The floor turned out okay.
Right.
But it certainly didn't look professional.
Well.
So that's the scary part of this whole process.
Yes. But there's good news and a whole lot less terrifying option out there. At Repcola in Port City Paints, we actually have a machine. It's called the on-floor machine. And it's a great way to sand your floors down. The machine just kind of glides because of the way that it works. It's not a drum sander. The base spins one way and the little heads inside spin another way. It goes just as fast as a drum sander will, but with a whole lot less damage. You can literally control this machine with two fingers across the floor.
You can literally let it stop moving, but still sanding, and you won't damage the floor.
Nope. That's the great thing about it. If you get distracted talking to one of the kids and, oh, man.
Yelling at the children.
Right.
Put that down.
Do
take that out of your ear. Don't put that in your nose. All the things that parents have to say.
Yes, exactly.
You'll be fine with this machine.
Uh-huh.
If you need more information, we can't go into everything about the on-floor machine right now, but we can get you more information. We rent them out. You can call any Repcolite or Port City Paint store. You can email Betsy and I at radio@repcolite.com. Ask us your questions, and we'll get you whatever answers.
Right. There's also a vacuum that you can rent with this. I just want to throw that out there.
Virtually dust-free.
Yeah, because dust with those drum sanders is a huge problem. This, you won't have that problem
right.
with.
It's a really cool system.
Yeah.
It's definitely something to look into if you've got to refinish the wood floor.
Right.
Now, once you've got it sanded, all you need to do is apply your stain and your polyurethane.
Right. Yep. Now, just a quick word of warning when you're choosing stain colors. Darker stain colors, the darker you go, you know, like those really rich mocha kinds of colors are popular, but the more of it you have on a huge floor, the more it will show little imperfections and scratches and things like that that are underneath. So you might want to go with a little bit lighter color.
Right. Once you've got the stain down, generally you would let it dry at least 24 hours before putting your first coat of poly on. And when you do get to the polyurethane, we're going to recommend anywhere from 3 to 4 coats, depending on the type you're using. And again, you would give 24 hours between coats, along with a light sanding, you know, before you get that next coat of poly on.
Right.
Now, quickly, for polyurethane and for the tools that we would recommend, I'm just going to quickly say there are two basic types, like we mentioned in the last segment of polyurethane, a water-based and an oil-based version.
Yep.
Repcolite has Mirapoly. That's the oil-based version.
Yep.
That's going to be probably the easiest thing you could possibly work with. It stays wet for a long time. It's easy to brush out or roll out or whatever you decide to do. It will self-level beautifully. The only downside to the Mirapoly is the smell. So you'd have to ventilate and all of those things. There is a water-based version, Mira Clear.
Yep.
That's the water-based version that Repcolite manufactures right here in Holland.
Right.
And so it's a really high-end product.
Yes,
really
it
cool.
is.
It will have the same durability characteristics as the oil-based will. So it's just as good. You get
That's
the soap and water cleanup.
Know.
Right.
Yep.
Soap and water cleanup, all of that. The only downside to the Mira Clear is that it dries a little faster, which can make application just a little trickier.
Right.
And it also builds less quickly. So you're going to need an extra coat.
Right. Now, when it comes to application tools, there are lots of different options out there. There are paint and stain pads. There are lamb's wool applicators. There are rollers, brushes, things like that. If you stop out at any of our stores, we'll help you find just the perfect tool to use to apply all these things, depending on what coating you choose.
All right. Now,
yes.
get your tape measures out.
I got it.
You've got just a few more minutes to do that because the time is here. We're going to do our very first hands-on listen and learn.
I'm excited.
And it's all about tape measures and a number of secret capabilities that very few of us even know about. That's coming up next. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repcolite Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, welcome back. And we're excited because this is the very first hands-on listen and learn that we've ever tried.
I've been waiting for this segment the entire time.
It's going to be fun because we're going to talk about tape measures.
Yes.
And hopefully we've got ours here. You can
yes.
hear them.
Just so everyone knows we're not faking it.
Hopefully you've got yours handy as well. If
yes.
not, you've got a little time. Go scrounge one up a minute because
yeah.
it's going to be easier to go over some of the things that we're going to talk about if you've got one in hand.
Right.
And it's worth it because
yeah.
these little things, these tape measures, do way more than we give them credit for. There's a lot more features and a lot more going on with this simple little tool.
Yes, there's a whole lot more to think about that, you know, I have never in my life stopped to ponder and
right.
discover.
Well, when we first talked about doing this segment, it seemed kind of boring.
Right.
Until we dug into it. Now, one of the reasons we decided to do this is we saw a video from a gentleman who calls himself the Essential Craftsman.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's a great video. It's 11 minutes or so of all kinds of different
but
tips and
so
tricks.
But it's so worth it because it's so fun to watch.
So a lot of this comes from that. Some of it is just common knowledge, stuff that we've dug up and things
right.
we've known.
Yep.
But we thought we'd put it all together in a segment. So,
yes.
all right, tape measures.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go over some of the options out there first off. Let's
yeah,
just
so you
start
can
with
go
that.
Buy a good tape measure.
Right. Now,
right.
when it comes to the measuring system used, most of them will use the imperial system, inches,
yes.
feet, and
yeah.
all of that. But you can get them with the metric system right on the tapes.
There's also ones out there that have fractions actually labeled on the tape measure. I have one right here. It's very handy because they show you where 1/8 of an inch, 1/16 of an inch is. So it takes the guesswork out of it. You're not counting the little lines.
I don't ever like counting the little lines.
No,
I
don't
screw
either.
It up. Some of the tape measures have measurements on both sides of the tape. It's printed on both sides.
Yeah.
So if the tape would flip over or curl over, you can still get an accurate measurement without having to worry about flipping it over.
Yeah.
So there's those things going on. There's
right.
all kinds of different hooks on the end. Some of them are magnetic. Some of them have hooks on the top, like a double-sided hook.
Yep.
So you can hook it underneath things and get a measurement if you
right.
need to.
Yep.
Those are some of the options out there.
Yeah, there are also different widths of tape. Some of them are a little bit wider. I think that Fat Max
Stanley makes
Stanley.
A Fat Max.
Yep, and the wider tape actually extends out further. They call it the break when you extend it out and finally it flips over and makes that horrible
yeah.
metal sound.
Most of them will go about 7 feet or so.
Yeah, roughly.
And the Fat Max will usually go to about 11 or just over that.
Yeah.
That
so,
you can extend it without it collapsing. So
right.
if you need to measure something high, that would be handy to have. So
right.
be aware of that. Some of them have locking buttons. Some of them automatically lock when
yep.
you pull the tape out. It's just a matter of what you're looking for. The
right.
big thing to take away from this is that you want to buy quality. Just
yes.
buy a really good one. Whatever features you need, just make sure you get a good one because they're inexpensive in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
And you will use this tool all the time.
Well,
so get a good one.
Get a good one because you're going to use it more when we're done with this segment because you're going to know all the capabilities of a tape measure.
And let's get to some of that.
Yes.
So now you're going to actually want to have the tape measure in your little
hot
hands.
Little hand.
Your hot little hands.
Uh-huh.
Because you've been holding it so tightly, waiting.
Well, that's what my mom always used to say.
Yeah.
Put that in your hot little hands.
Well, hopefully you've got it in your hot little hands. And let's take a look at it. And
yes.
let's start with the hook on the end. Now, if you grab that and fiddle with it a little bit, you realize it's loose.
It is not
broken.
That means
you've got a defective tape measure.
No.
Send it back. No, it's supposed to be loose. I had no idea that was a feature, that it's an important feature.
Yeah.
I was always trying to fix mine. And by doing that, I wrecked it.
Uh-huh.
It needs to slide. And here's the interesting thing. The hook slides the thickness of the hook, and it will slide either way.
Yes.
So if you push the tape, you get a measurement by pushing it against a wall, the hook will slide. So that first inch is an accurate inch.
Right.
If you're pulling it, it will slide that way again. So that first inch is an accurate inch. If it didn't move, that first inch and every subsequent inch would be off. Now,
right.
another feature of the hook, if you look at it, is it's got a little tab cut out.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
to hook nails or screws or something like that. So if you're measuring a long distance and you don't have somebody to help you, you can actually drive a nail in, hook it around that, and stretch it out. That will hold it for you.
Right. Another really cool thing about tape measures, and I didn't know this till we started digging into it, if you flip your tape measure over to the back where the little hook is that goes on your pocket, there's a very small number, usually printed or indented into the plastic or metal, and that number tells you how long the tape measure case is, so that you can stick it in something like a windowsill. You just add the measurement that's on the back of the case to whatever measurement you're getting, and you don't have to do that whole little bendy thing where you pull out
where
extra
you try to
and
ram
shove
it into the corner.
corner,
and you try to eyeball what that distance is. This will give you a more accurate measurement. Sure, you
right.
have to do some math But that's not
going
to hurt everybody.
Yes, but we're going to tell you how to do some math in a little bit with your tape measure.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right.
We're talking about tape measures and all the things that they'll do on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show.
Mm-hmm.
And we just talked about some of the basic features on the outside of the tape, on the case.
Yep.
Now let's actually get to the tape itself. And let's look at the numbers and the markings that are on the tape.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of little shortcuts here that will help you out.
Yeah, they've very nicely marked. This is the one that everyone is aware of. The footmark is, well, Dan likes to think that
it's
looks
a little
like
house.
I think it's an arrow, a big fat arrow.
It's a big fat arrow or a little squatty house. But either way, it's at each foot marker.
Right.
So very easily you can see
yes.
where the feet are. That's pretty basic.
Right.
Let's show that we're smarter
than
just that.
Let's kick it up a notch. Yeah.
All right. So if you look, you'll see at the 16-inch mark,
mm-hmm.
there's generally speaking, on most tape measures, you're going to see a red rectangle
yep.
with a double-sided arrow.
Right.
And that repeats every 16 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for 16 on center spacing that's used very commonly in construction.
Right. It's for your studs. And you want to use that because most building codes will tell you that that's what you have to do. Plus, building materials are actually manufactured so that they fit 16 on center studs. So that's why that's very important. It takes the guesswork out of where your studs need to
go. Right. The little red rectangle tells you exactly where the next stud should be centered. Now, lesser known than the 16 on center spacing is the 19.2-inch joist spacing measurement.
Yes, and this is the one that I didn't know what that little symbol was for. I always wondered. It's the little, well, some tape measures, it's a little tiny diamond. Some it's, well, mine happens to be a triangle,
mm-hmm.
but it's just barely off of 19 3/16. It's a little to the right of that.
Right, and it repeats every 19.2 inches. And as we said, that's for standard joist spacing. So
right.
again, it just takes some of the guesswork out of the spacing.
Right. Now, those are all very cool things. But did you know that you can actually use your tape measure as a sort of slide rule? It will actually do addition, subtraction, and division for you. So all those little fractions that people like me hate adding and subtracting together, my tape measure will do it for me.
Right. And we'll quickly try to show you how. And this is where you're going to want one in your hand so you can follow along.
Yep.
And we're going to use very simple numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It will work even if you're doing fractions. And that's where it becomes really handy.
Right.
But for the sake of this, let's just keep the numbers simple and whole.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that we've got 120 inches and we want to remove 16 inches from it. Again,
yes.
we could do it in our heads with those numbers. But if they were fractions, it gets a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to pull it off, whether it's simple whole numbers or fractions, all you need to do is this. You pull the tape measure open to the larger number that you need.
Right.
So in this instance, it's 120.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and do that at home. You pull out the tape measure till you've got 120 inches shown on the measure.
Right.
Now you take the hook,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of the tape, and pull it back and fold it over in a sense, you know,
yes.
bend it
make
lightly.
Make a little U shape.
Yeah, make a U shape and bring that hook exactly to the 120 inch mark.
Yes, right next to it.
Right next to it on the tape. So
yep.
now you've got both tapes. It's the one tape, but there are two halves of it lying side by side
yes.
with the numbers facing up. So you can
right.
see both sets of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So on one side, you've got 120 inches working down. The other side, you've got 1 inch working upwards.
Yep.
Well, take that 1 inch side working upwards, keep the hook right at the 120 mark, and walk your way up to the 16-inch mark.
Yep.
Because you're wanting to remove 16 inches from
mm-hmm.
120. Find the 16-inch mark and cross-compare to the number directly parallel.
Right.
And you'll find 104. Which is the math.
Which, magic.
Again, is really cool. It's kind of a parlor trick.
Right.
But not a big deal when you're doing 120 minus 16. But if you're doing 120 and 7/8 minus 16 and a quarter, now it becomes a much
right.
easier process to get exactly that number and know exactly what figure or what measurement you're working with. Anyway, tape measures. A ton more things we could cover,
right.
but we're out of time. And
yes.
we're out of time with this whole show, not just the segment. It's over.
I
the Repco Light Home Improvement Show for another week is in the can. And
so sad.
It is sad, but we can start looking ahead to next
it's
week.
It's okay. It measured up.
It measured up. If you want to hear this episode again, you can go online at repcolite.com and you can find the podcast right there.
And make sure you're following us on Facebook because, again, you can ask your question there and you could be the next one to win a $50 gift certificate. And who doesn't want that?
Everybody wants to win a gift certificate.
Yeah.
I would think.
I would think so.
Anyway, whatever you do today, have a productive Saturday. And whatever you do, try to find a way to work paint into it because it's going to make it way cooler.
Yes.
I promise.
At least it'll brighten things up.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And help you unlock the amazing, mysterious secret world of all your tools.
Who knew?
Who knew? Thanks for listening.